Welcome to My Worst Date. I'm Cassie.
I'm Keegan.
I'm Christina.
We have some really, I would call it devastating news. Elon Musk and Grimes of
R.I.P.
Yeah.
Listen,
it's a sad, sad day. Love isn't real, you guys. And I think that's what we're trying to say.
Yeah, I think we all thought that it was going to last forever. Devastated. Do you know how mad I got? For everything, for the advancements that we've made, right, in the algorithms that we have on all of our streaming platforms, you would think that Netflix knows me well enough not to banner autoplay whatever that dumb Elon Musk SpaceX documentary is.
Oh, I haven't seen that. They do know me well enough. They're like, no.
I turned on my Netflix and that man is on my TV talking to me.
No.
No. Like Netflix, I thought we were closer than this. I thought we were tighter than this. I thought you knew me better. Why would you do that to me?
And they're like, we've heard you say the word Elon Musk multiple times. And so we thought
mean you love him.
Right.
Yeah. Ooh. I mean, listen, like celebrity couples getting together and breaking up, it's kind of like interesting or whatever. This one, I just don't know if I just ever understood anything about it.
I have a real don't care moment about the whole thing, honestly.
I really just don't understand why people like them.
Yeah.
I really don't get it.
Culturally?
People love Elon Musk.
Yeah.
They keep giving him attention and I don't fucking understand. Okay, he got fucking high with Joe Rogan one time.
Well, this is a broader like sociology conversation because I could really get into why people like Elon Musk with our culture of worshiping money and money makers being part of it. But anywho,
money havers, money make havers. Shit.
Speaking of algorithms, though, real quickly, I have to talk about like, you know, how little time I've spent on Facebook. Like, I'm literally like, it's a 5 minute catch up a day. If I get on at all, like it's a really low on my totem pole of things that I do, period. I just don't have the time. I really, truly don't. I texted you guys earlier this week and was like, it's been 4 days since I've had a shower. I literally wake up, go to my computer to work, get off my work computer to get on my school computer, then go lay down to watch like one show before I fall asleep. Like that is my week. It's been wild. So the funny thing that I've noticed is that when I have gotten on Facebook recently, my Amazon ads are like, we don't know what you like anymore. So here are like a bunch of random things that are like, I'm like, what? Like, I don't want, like, it's just weird stuff. Like one, I got like a Wayfair thing that was like, here's a portable bathtub that it's like, what?
You know, it's funny because I texted back and I was like, well, I've taken 3 depression baths this week. So I don't know which is worse, you know, and Amazon does know me because it's trying to sell me like weighted blankets.
Oh, yeah.
like it's like, honey, we can see you're going through a rough time right now.
Here's some self-care.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, I was like that last week, got into a really bad spot. And I did have time, actually, to shower. I just chose
you're like
not to.
And
then
today.
That day that I finally did, I was like, immediate mood boost.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, oh, wow. That I should at least make it a habit. If you're feeling sad or feeling down,
take a
shower. It's glorious.
That's the thing about depression that's really upsetting is that oftentimes when you're depressed, it's like those things that are going to make you feel better are the things that you can't make yourself do.
Right.
Like getting up, going for a walk, like cleaning up your space, taking a shower are all the things you don't do because you're depressed. And then it's like a horrible like
cycle.
Because
it is all the things that actually make you feel great. Like if my house is clean, like I love the process of having my house clean. Like I love the feeling of having a shower, feeling clean. Like, yeah.
Yeah. And I was telling you guys last time we recorded that because you were like, Keegan, why do you have a face of makeup on? I was like, I didn't do anything or go anywhere.
Yeah.
But I did this to make myself feel better. It's like those little things that you do to like, those little mood boosters, like you were saying, like, I don't know.
Yeah.
No, that is a good point. And then I watched, I've actually been left to my own devices this weekend, which is really exciting because then I watch all these like insane things that I've been wanting to watch forever. But Controlling Britney Spears came out last night, an addendum to Framing Britney Spears. They got her security team to basically say, can you imagine the complete violation of privacy that they were reading through all of her texts? They basically had mirrored her iPhone. Oh. They signed in her thing to an iPad, and they every text she sent, they bugged her bedroom.
That's what I was going to say. That's
they
what I had
bugged
heard.
Her fucking bedroom.
She is honestly, almost 40 years old.
Wow.
And her daddy bugged her bedroom. It's
awful.
I mean, a violation no matter what.
I don't want anybody looking at what I do on my phone.
Oh, God, no.
I do private information. And nobody needs to know
this.
That's
right. No. That's right.
Nobody. Especially my dad.
Yeah.
And that a room full of strangers. Like, you know, like, because it's not just your dad. It's like, it's a whole team of people reading your most private.
That you pay. That you fucking
that you employ.
Oh, I have nothing but anger. Apparently, awful. On the 28th of this month, September 28th or September 29th, I forget which, Netflix has a big one coming out called like Britney versus Spears.
Oh, yeah.
And her big court date is coming up the 29th. So, I mean, I've got my fingers crossed because I'm really glad we're finally having a conversation about this because I feel like the culture has changed a lot in the past 13 years. The conversation about women and about what we do to women in the entertainment industry.
Yeah.
But more than that, it's really put a light on the whole process of conservatorships and how that other movie too with Rosamund Pike that I care a lot. I'm just like how easy it is to just abuse and take advantage of vulnerable people is really, and I don't know much about this situation too, but it's making me want to look to see what's going on with Amanda Bynes.
Oh yeah.
She's still under conservatorship too.
I was just listening to the newest episode of Criminal, which was getting me just like white hot and furious today, where it wasn't a conservatorship, but it was an older woman whose family owns like a bunch of stores in Ohio, actually. Like
I like that
stores.
You looked at me. You're like, in Ohio?
Yeah,
like
you know. I mean, even though like both of you are here and you're both from Ohio. But
you
she was
them, right?
like in her 90s, she had inherited from her husband who had passed away $80 million and had allowed her two grandsons who were like financial advisors to be her financial advisors.
Oh,
and
no,
them, baby. Along with their father, her son, like
wiped her clean.
Tried to. Like, just completely.
That's disgusting.
It's horrifying. And it made me so angry. Like, I just. Elder abuse and stuff like that. Because then they started getting physical with her when she started pushing back. It was so upsetting. I mean, it's Criminal, so it's a fantastic episode. I highly recommend going and listening to it. But, you know, like, that kind of thing, just taking advantage of vulnerable populations is so.
Well, because we don't really have great safeguards in place in this country for vulnerable people. You're looking at like the mental health crisis that we have right now because Reagan completely eliminated any kind of mental health care in our country. Drugs, drug abuse, that sort of thing. Or what happens when you become elderly? Like,
or the fact that like a very large percentage of Americans are like one disaster or one lost job away from
one physically ill.
One crisis away from
bankruptcy,
poverty.
Exactly.
It's just a bad situation.
Yeah. Ooh, woof. But yeah, I'm stoked. I'll watch and support anything about Britney Spears. I'm worried about this being a further exploitation, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Is she making money off of this? That would make me, it does make me kind of feel like people are exploiting her to make money off of her misfortune. And I mean, it's a story that needs to be told.
Right.
So there, it is a double-edged sword where it's like, we don't need to know what's going on with Britney Spears, but we do need to know what happens with conservatorships. We right. do need to be aware that this is something that can negatively impact someone's life. She just happens to be somebody who's very much high in the
profile.
Public, high profile, exactly, mm-hmm. in the public eye. That makes it an easier story to tell.
Right.
What and I if it can hope, happen to her, it can happen to yeah. anyone.
Oh, yeah.
yeah. Yeah. What I hope is that after this is all over and she's successfully out of the conservatorship and like living her own life, that we leave Britney alone after yeah. that. You yeah. know what I mean? I really do, because I'm like, of course, she's always going to be the princess of pop. She's probably always going to be in the public eye to some degree.
Sure.
But I don't want to do what put her in this situation in the first place, which right. is just like a lot of concentrated attention, right. dissecting every little bit of her life. Or because I imagine the step after this, a lot of people are going to be like, okay, what does Britney's life look like post-conservatorship? What is right. she blah, blah, blah. And yeah. it's just going to continue on this thing about like fixating on her life, which is the last thing she needs. Like,
I just hope. It seems like she's in, I mean, she's engaged
yeah,
to that guy
that's
now.
Exciting.
It seems
yeah.
like from the little snippets of interviews and everything like that, that I've seen is that like she does want to get married and yeah. have another baby and, yeah.
and hopefully good be able her. To see her kids
yeah.
more on her yeah. terms, you know?
The funniest thing I saw about the whole, like when they got engaged is her dude face. I don't remember his name. He was like, he's like, don't worry, because everybody's like, oh, prenup, prenup, prenup.
Right. Yeah.
And he's like, don't worry, I'm definitely getting a prenup. He's like, I want to make sure that I might protect my 2016 Jeep Wrangler and whatever, like,
and his shoes. Yeah, yeah,
something. It was like something really like obscure like that. I was like, that is, mwah, yes, yes.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
But seriously, girl, if you're listening.
Yeah, no.
Do that.
For sure.
Yeah. yeah. Seriously. Lock it up. Yeah. She's had enough people dipping into her money. Uh-huh. The fact that she has $60 million, which of course is a lot of money, but compare it to like J-Lo, Taylor Swift, like other people that made money in that big era of big yep. music sales. Mm-hmm. I mean, these are people that have $400-500 million.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
Britney had a fucking sold out 2 years in Vegas.
Yeah.
Residency.
Where's that money?
Successful tours. Where's that fucking money?
And yeah. she's been working since she could walk.
Yeah.
Yes.
Basically. Like, she's been yes. working her whole life. It's, yeah. Yeah.
I want to know where the Honey, fuck that money
she
is.
She deserves to retire. She yes. has literally worked a full retirement's worth of living wages.
Yep.
She should be able to not work another fucking day in her life.
Yeah.
And if she doesn't want
it.
To. Yeah. If she doesn't want to, then I feel the same way. Girl, I mean, I also understand, like, if you want to have a career on your own terms, like, what if all this time she's been like, oh, I've wanted to do all these things with my sure. with my career and my persona, in oh. which case, fucking
well,
go for it.
She drops,
I can't wait.
Like, a fucking duet with Radiohead or something.
Oh, my God.
Like,
right?
What?
Exactly.
Listen, like, that happens.
She's like, I've been wanting to go singer-songwriter this whole time.
Oh, and no. we're like, what is going on? Oh, my God.
But if not, and she just wants to, like, you know, live in a hut.
Yeah.
In Jamaica.
Get it, girl.
More power to you. Please do it.
Yeah. You want to go under the Tuscan sun, that shit.
Yeah. Oh, my God. That's two episodes we brought up that movie.
Listen.
It's a great movie.
Listen, is it my dream to, like, just run away to Italy? And
I mean, yeah.
I mean, why wouldn't it be?
Can we rewatch that soon? Because I feel like now I want to.
Should I have picked that for our Tainted Love movie now?
Oh my gosh.
Well, but aww. That's not tainted. That is beautiful.
It's beautiful.
Golden hour, love.
Yeah.
Golden hour. C'est magnifique.
Yes. Well, who should we fuck, marry, kill this week?
So I've been sharing these TikToks with you guys recently of this woman who basically just goes through naming celebrities that she thinks would be able to, like,
hit it.
Not just hit it, but, like, would be able to get her there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know what
yeah,
I'm
yeah,
saying?
Yeah.
Right. And so she's, like, going through a list of celebrities. I can't find her right now, but I will try and credit her later. But she's going through a list of celebrities, and her opinions are always
fire.
Spot on.
Mm, yeah.
Right.
She really nailed it.
Nails it. Nails it every time. And she's done this series several times. And so we started a chat thread about people who we thought would be bad.
Could not get it.
At it. Yeah. Who wouldn't be able to get us there. Who would not be good in bed.
Right.
And so often I feel like sometimes our fuck, marry, kills are pretty like, we're like, yes, of course, this is what you do. This is what you do. This is what you do. What if you take three people who are bad in bed?
Okay. Yeah.
Who, I've of got course, one. Dr.
TJ Fossil.
Of course. We want you to understand we don't actually know.
Yeah. We don't know.
This is all speculation.
Yes.
Yeah.
But in my opinion, my pick would be Jimmy Fallon.
Okay. 100.
I feel like it doesn't need to be explained, but I will explain it.
Go for it. Yeah. No, I completely agree with this.
There is something about that man's personality that I just, I feel like he's going to be telling jokes. I feel like he thinks he's good at it.
He like make a fart noise or whatever.
Oh, God. Yeah, exactly.
He's going to be like silly or whatever.
But not in like a cute, fun way. Like in like a, oh my God, I can't believe I'm in this situation. How did I get to this point in my life kind of way? Yes. Like, you know what I mean? Where you're like laying next to him in bed and you're like, why?
Why?
How did this happen? And you know, I feel like when he was on SNL, I feel like it would be those vibes where it's just like, okay, it was the, it was funny the first four times that you cracked up in a sketch, but it's not funny anymore.
Right.
And I feel like that feeling,
like you're not trying,
is the feel. Yes, that you're not good at your job.
Yeah,
that's how I feel. Yeah. So I feel like it's.
He's been able to skate by too.
A lot of skating.
A lot of skating.
A lot of roller skates.
A lot of I'm friends with Justin Timberlake, and that's why I still have a job. Kind of vibes.
Yeah,
I did go to the taping of his very first episode. He was stressed out.
Uh-oh.
Seeing a stressed out Jimmy Fallon?
Oh, no, no, no.
That wasn't fun.
Oh, no, 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 no. And I also feel like he's going to be, because I feel like sometimes when we talk about people who are bad in bed, they're bad in bed because they're not going to try. Mm-hmm. I feel like Jimmy Fallon is going to try in the worst way.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, he's going to be one of those people that like somehow fingers you like really wrong. Yeah. You're like,
this isn't working. This isn't.
While trying to do something else,
yes.
And you're just like, this is a lot and I don't like it. Yeah. So that's going to be my choice.
Chafing.
I got to go back through this thread. I'm like, I feel like we had some real good fire takes.
I am going.
You had a real fire take.
No, I thought of somebody else.
Okay.
I am going with Vin Diesel.
Ooh. Okay. Yeah. I see it.
Yeah. I'm going with Vin Diesel. Just because you lift weights doesn't mean that you're good at other things. And I am convinced that he's just a jackhammer.
Yeah. I mean, it also doesn't necessarily mean you're hot either. And this might be a hot take.
Right.
I don't know. But I never thought Vin Diesel was hot.
No,
when Vin Diesel was coming up, people were losing their minds about Vin Diesel. Like XXX time. You remember that?
God,
everybody was like losing their minds about Vin Diesel. And I was always kind of like, I don't get it.
Same.
I don't get it.
I don't think. See, that's the thing is I don't think he's unattractive.
Me neither.
Like, it's fine or whatever. It's just like. The vibe I get from him is just like one of
sunglasses
just like,
during.
Yeah, just like too a little sunglasses too cool for school, during. You know, where it just I don't love it. And then, you know, I'd have to eat kale a lot, I'm sure.
It's just, a lot of chicken breasts.
Yes.
So much chicken breasts.
Only
and
wild rice. Yeah.
Yes.
You're never eating white rice again.
No. So yeah, I'm going with Vin Diesel. How about you, Cass?
I'm nervous.
Oh.
Uh-oh.
I don't want to get us like taken off of iTunes.
Okay. Uh-oh.
But I have to go with Joe Rogan.
Oh, fuck. Jesus. Dude, this is going to be the easiest
this
thing.
This is going to be the easiest thing, but you're...
I just
you're not wrong. And he'd explain to you if you didn't come why it was your fault.
Oh.
Why or, you fucked up.
Yeah,
he did it.
Oh, I'm sorry.
He did it right.
I'm sorry you didn't come. I did everything right. Exactly. I don't know how you couldn't have come. Like I honestly I put in all the fucking effort.
Oh, no.
I read a study that
That says women
100%.
When women don't come, it's not because of the man. It's actually because of the
women. Yeah, he's
going to
throw some faux science at you that he read on fucking 4chan.
Yep.
Oh, my God. Absolutely fucking not.
That is so funny.
He's the worst. I don't care. Cassie, don't you apologize for this.
I'm so nervous. We're getting canceled.
No, you know, actually, we're not. Apple's going to love us because Joe Rogan's podcast signed an exclusive deal with Spotify. So
we're off of Spotify now. Sorry, guys.
It's all right.
It's all good. Go to CastBox anyways. Listen to us on CastBox. Yeah, this is actually really easy now.
Okay.
Okay. I don't, it's still, I mean, it's who I'm going to kill is very easy, but
it's a tricky one. Okay. I think I know.
Oh my God. This is really hard. I actually, who am I going to marry?
That's the question.
That is the question.
I am not a silly comedy person. Yeah. I don't like silliness.
You know that I do.
I do not like silliness.
I, like movies like Airplane, Fletch. I know it's like hot
take. I don't
take.
Like those either.
I don't like.
No, I hate those.
I don't
those.
Like physical comedy. I don't like silly comedy. I don't like Chevy Chase. What? I don't think he's funny. Yeah, I know. Well, this is my own hot take. Yeah. I prefer like dry comedy or whatever. That's my sure. my.
I don't like cup movies like Airplane either. They're not my jam.
I loved Airplane.
So I actually think I'm gonna even with that said, I'm still gonna kill Joe Rogan.
Oh wow, yeah, no, there's no question there for me.
I'm gonna fuck Jimmy Fallon.
Yeah.
Take it where I'm gonna take it. I don't know. And then I guess I'm gonna marry Vin Diesel and ooh. Just eat that chicken breast and
broccoli.
Watch a lot of really awful action movies.
Yeah,
I love action movies though.
Yeah. Ooh,
it's I don't feel good about any of my choices. I hate my life.
The problem is there's not a good choice to be made.
No
here.
Good choices.
There's no good choice because here's the thing. Of course, I'm gonna murder. Wow.
Damn. Heard it here first.
Shit.
Restart that subreddit now. We're on the
allegedly.
Oh no. You can't say that.
Oh shit. I'm gonna K word Joe Rogan. I gotta do it. Oh, I just gosh. You know, like he's my least favorite kind of person.
Insufferable.
Like he's right up there with Elon. Yeah. Come on. So for sure. Out. Bye. The other two, this is tough.
Yeah.
This is actually very hard. And you know what it's coming down to? This is how bad you know it is. Because what it's coming down to for me in my brain is which one's going to be away the most.
That's exactly what I was just thinking.
I was like, who's going to be gone the most?
Yeah, I'm like, who's away for work? The most, so I don't have to be in the house.
It seems like Jimmy Fallon. He works a lot.
Yeah. Right, he works every day.
Yeah.
So... And he has to, like, I'm sure, be at the studio kind of early and stuff like that. So I think I'm actually going to marry Jimmy Fallon for that reason.
But,
okay.
He lives and works. So that's you're going to have to see him every night
Vin
when
Diesel's
he comes home
gonna
from work.
Vin Diesel's going to be gone filming for months at a time.
Correct. Yeah.
On those Fast and the Furious movies. Yeah. All so good. Hoo-wee.
Yeah. It's tricky.
Oh, it's tricky.
I think I know what
you know what? I'm going to, and you know, I like a guy who can make me laugh, but... I'm going to have to kill Jimmy Fallon. Mm. I'm going to have to do it. Just, you're right. Killed. He's there all the time.
You're gonna kill Joe Rogan and Jimmy Fallon? You changed it to kill.
No. That's not how this works.
Wow, this is really, this is how bad it is for me. All right.
And one night stands?
I will one night stand Jimmy Fallon.
Just a couple shots down the gullet.
No, it's going to be awful. I really feel like it's going to be so bad. But yeah, I'm going to do that. And I'm going to go ahead and marry Vin Diesel. I don't think it's going to be my best life, but I actually feel
it's
like...
It's going to be your worst life though, right?
Yeah, I mean, I have always said that like once in my life, I would like to be in like really amazing shape. And I do feel like Vin Diesel could fulfill that for me. Yeah. Like, you know.
I could get a Peloton.
Yeah. We would have an amazing home gym.
Yeah.
Like an amazing home gym.
Okay. I'm feeling better about my life now.
Yeah. Yeah. And he probably, like Jimmy Fallon lives in New York City, which I love New York. But I feel like Vin Diesel lives somewhere that has like a really nice big pool. Mm-hmm. Like
you
I'm going to be
me.
Able
That's,
to.
That
yeah.
was my thing. I was like, I want to be on the best coast.
Yeah. Yeah. And I can like, I can have, I see myself having one of those like very luxurious robes sitting by the pool with a margarita with Vin Diesel while
he's
away
time.
Filming.
That's right.
right?
Even when he's home, you got pool. You got, you know, you got, you're gonna have a nice life.
He maybe also seems like the type who might be open to opening up your marriage. Oh, true. So I'm kind of true. Like,
and he also seems like something that knows a lot about tequila. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Yeah. I see him having very like expensive tequila.
Yeah, I feel like I could actually spend more. Like, I feel like Vin Diesel is one that I could maybe like get to know and find things about him that I like.
Yes,
right.
Yes.
Whereas
exactly.
like Jimmy
that's
Fallon
exactly
is
what I was gonna say.
Gonna annoy me the whole time.
The whole time. Mm-hmm.
So
yeah. I don't. Yeah,
so,
I don't
so
know.
Kill Mary.
Kill Mary. There we go.
My take is gonna be different. Okay, I am gonna marry Vin Diesel, and for some of the reasons you already said, which were he's on the West Coast, but year round, I'm going to have better weather.
Yeah.
I like living in LA. I like the location. So for that reason alone, also too, I think there might be like we get to see surface gruff, like his persona.
Right.
I don't, you know, we don't really get to see who he is.
Maybe he reads.
Maybe he's a voracious reader, you know, and he's got a lot to talk about. Who knows?
I maybe just feel like it's more of a mystery too. If we're talking about like,
there you go,
all these people are being bad in bed. I feel like Vin Diesel would be the most amenable to proving.
That's agreed.
Absolutely. Agreed. You're so right.
Yeah. Yes.
You're so right.
He's directable.
Mm-hmm.
This is where things are going to get off the rails.
I'm furious already.
There is just something about Jimmy Fallon that I cannot.
It'd be like fucking a Muppet.
I cannot one night. I cannot. Not even one night. I cannot.
Oh my gosh.
I literally know.
You can one night with Joe Rogan?
I could.
Oh.
And here's why. Here's why. I feel like at least it'd be angry sex. Like I'm just like, you're not going to try. But I don't really need you to because I get off easy and that's fine. And we're just going to fuck this out and go our separate ways.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Be gone. It
doesn't even have to be a whole night.
You're like, I got an hour and a half.
15 minutes in the bathroom of the comedy store. And then call it
a day. Comedy store bathroom.
God. Oh, disgusting. God.
You're filthy.
You're getting a yeast infection. You're getting a UTI.
Just even thinking about
it. Oh, man. Just take a Z-Pack with you and go with God.
Oh, God.
Ew.
It seems to be good. I'm just saying. I mean, like, it's literally, I think I've come out of this being a real Vin Diesel fan at this point.
Yeah.
I don't know how
that's how bad the options were. We were like, listen.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, that was awful.
I do know we have a new patron to shout out. Somebody that is in Canada.
Yes.
So
if you're listening and you have not received your shirt yet, just know that it is coming. We had to do a roundabout with the shirt because you're in Canada.
Which is awesome.
Which is amazing.
Welcome. Yeah.
I want to give a huge shout out to Emma Allard. Thank you so much for joining us on Patreon. We got your really lovely, sweet message, and we are so happy and grateful to have you as a listener. We want you to know, and we want all of our listeners to know, actually, that like you mean so much to us. The fact that that you listen every week and that you care enough
to hang out with us
is amazing.
Emma's actually the reason why I finally took a shower. Honestly, I was like, oh, I mean something. You're like, better I deserve- wash my sweaty ass right now.
You're like, I deserve a shower.
I deserve a shower. So I'm so grateful. Thank you for everyone that listens. If you do have a chance to like, rate, and review and all that stuff, I know we haven't asked for that in a while. We'd really appreciate it.
It helps.
It does. It helps so much. And we love you guys. So let's take five and we'll come back with stories.
Sounds good.
Yes. And we're back. All right. I will kick us off with stories. So our early site/texting conversations were pretty normal until the day we planned to go out. She called me. I missed it. So it was a voicemail and left me a message. It was 2 minutes long, which is a long message.
Oh, no. But, how many times did she record it too? Do you think she was like, ran out of time? Were you recording?
Can you even run out of time anymore on like?
Yeah.
Can you?
I think you can.
It's been a while, but I have.
And also don't leave me a voicemail.
True.
We haven't even met yet.
Just text me.
Like in person.
She got my phone number. Just text me.
Yes. Did you see, I think it was Whitney Cummings tweeted where she's like, if If I text you and you immediately call me because you know I have my phone in my hand, I will call the police.
Yeah. I feel the same way.
Please don't do it.
911.
Yeah.
After the normal beginning of the message, she started talking about how she really liked my pictures online. Then she said she wanted me to look at the pictures she texted me. I missed those too before the call. Then she said that if I felt like it, that I should feel free to take a picture right now and send it to her. Frankly, I was a little weirded out, but I gave her the benefit of the doubt. I arrive at the place. Of course, she looks nothing like her pictures. At the time, I was too nice to just walk away, so I decided I needed to finish the date and move on. I sit down and order a Coke. It was already late and a school night, and I had just begun drinking at age 34. Don't ask. It's a long story.
Okay.
She looks at me disapprovingly and then says, no, go ahead and add a shot of Jack to that, to the bartender.
Don't fuck with people's choices.
You don't know.
Around alcohol, exactly. Drugs, anything like that. Oh, you do you, and don't fucking worry about anyone else's situation or relationship around that.
It's a first date.
Fucking rude.
It's so rude. I look at the bartender and kindly refuse. Oh, no, I'm okay. Thank you. She looks at me and jokingly, she's like, what? Are you too good for alcohol? Loosen up, man.
Whoa. Okay.
This could be so bad. You don't know. Maybe this person is sober.
Also,
like,
none of your fucking business.
Also, none of your business.
God.
That's my least favorite look is like why people, when they have drinks, feel uncomfortable with someone who isn't drinking. Yeah. That's a you problem.
Yes.
That's 100%. Not that guy's problem. That's a problem you have with your own shit.
Yeah.
So deal with it and don't put it on someone
you're
else.
You're feeling insecure. Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You're like, I'm so much more fun when you're drunk.
Yeah. Yes. 100%.
Exactly. Yeah.
You are not confident in your personality with somebody who is sober, clearly. Mm-hmm. Again, she repeats her request to the bartender, to which I'm adamant, politely, again. Bartender has had enough of our shit and rolls her eyes as she goes and gets a Coke. It's at this point that I realize that my date is already three drinks in.
Yeah.
She goes back to me and alcohol and keeps picking on me. Her attitude is like, what's wrong with you? You're not drinking. Are you uptight? I'm also noticing that she's calling me pet names like Sweetie and Honey.
No.
After reassuring her that I'd rather not start drinking that late on a school night, I try and change the subject. We got on to cars. And with a completely straight face, she says, oh, I'm going to die in mine.
Oh my God. Whoa. Took a turn. Was not expecting that.
I giggled politely, thinking maybe she was joking that her car was fast. No, I'm literally going to die sometime when I'm 32.
Oh.
I'm morbidly fascinated and ask her to explain. She proceeds to tell me that it's because of a dream she keeps having. In her dream, she gets in a head-on collision with an 18-wheeler. She knows the place, time, and details. Mm-mm. It's like a bad Hollywood script, complete with bad dialogue. Tell my family I love them, paramedic. Tell them yourself because you're going to live.
Oh,
what?
My
is
God.
Going
oh.
on?
Oh, my God.
I
want to be the bartender so bad.
Me
right
too.
Now.
Like, I got the rag out and I'm like
cleaning a glass
I'm
right
slicing
there.
Lemons.
Real clean, you know? I ask her how she knew she dies in the dream. Apparently, she has an out-of-body experience in the hospital and knows she dies. I asked her why she bought the car in the first place knowing this. Her reply, I just didn't think about it.
I think you think about it all the time is what I think.
Yes.
I think it's all you think about.
Yeah, you have a lifetime movie playing when you go to sleep.
Like, yes.
Oh, my God.
The whole time, in addition to calling me bad pet names, she's nervous, fidgety. I mean, this is a first date / meetup, but it was uncomfortable because she was visibly not in her element. Every little joke, she would laugh uncontrollably. At this point, I'm looking for a moment to hit the eject button, but I'm trying to be nice. I'm looking around the bar, and I think she senses this, and suddenly she's like, hey, do you want to play some pool? This was the first sensical thing she had said all night, and
perfect.
I reply, yes, enthusiastically. The bartender explains we can close at the bar and start a new one with the manager of the pool equipment, or we can just keep it open. Our choice. Her. So, should we close it here, or bartender? Well, either you can close it right now or you can keep it open if you're going to drink more.
Don't give her choices. Just pick one.
Wait. So looking at me, what should I do? Keep it open or what are you saying? Should I pay or I'm confused?
Oh my God.
I nearly facepalmed on the spot and just said, here, I'll take care of it. I paid the tab. We got the pool equipment to go play. In all fairness, she was about 5 or 6 drinks in, so the rest could probably be chalked up to being drunk. We start playing pool. I play maybe once a year. She starts bragging that her uncle is an amateur's champion or something and taught her how to play. I end up beating her. Ooh. I beat her again. We start game 3 and she looks at me and says, you're cheating, aren't you?
Cheating?
How the fuck you cheat at pool? How? Is there a magnet under the... Yes. Like,
you're like, I'm always stripes because they're magnetized.
Of course, she's joking, but she won't let it go. How are you doing it? You're totally hustling me. I'm stunned. At this point, I've realized the novelty of the situation, and I'm starting to actually get mildly offended by her seemingly purposeful awkwardness. My friend texts me. Normally, I never text/talk on the phone on a date, but I wasn't worried about trying to save this sinking ship. My friend wanted to know how my date was going, and I sat there and texted back because I needed a breath of fresh air. She looks at me and says, oh, is that your girlfriend? You can tell her to stop texting. You're on a date with me.
Oh, what?
So naturally, I keep texting my friend every detail that was going on. I don't know what possessed me to keep playing. Maybe it was morbid curiosity to find out what she would say next. I was on my phone later and she asks again, what are you doing? Looking up more cheats so you can beat me?
What would you Google?
What would you Google? Pool cheats.
Wow.
And then she gets down eye level with the pool balls and starts talking to them in baby talk.
Oh no.
Stop doing what he's telling you to do. Do what I want you to do. Make me win, not him.
Ugh. Oh, God.
That's gross.
No. I can't wait to play pool again with you guys.
She made me take a sip of her beer just to prove I wasn't being uptight. It was Corona. I hate Corona, but she wouldn't take no for an answer.
Ew.
Finally, I was like, well, I've got to go to work tomorrow. And she took the hint. I walked her to her car and said goodnight. Sarcastically, I said, drive safe. To which she replied, oh, I don't die for another couple of years. It's all good.
Oh, my God. That is some whole ass mess.
Yes. Yes.
Oh, wow. My God.
Well, yeah. 5 or 6 drinks in. Oof.
I mean, I feel like that's outside of the good at pool also, window, you know, like
5 or 6 drinks in. Should she really be driving anywhere?
That's exactly. Very true.
Ooh. Yikes on bikes. Okay. My story is also from Reddit. This guy says, I'm feeling kind of down right now because I'm sitting in a coffee shop after a bad first date.
Oh,
so I'm kind of new to dating, but at the same time, I really am not. I didn't really date a lot, but I had been in a 2-year relationship since I found a guy I liked pretty early on into my dating period. Well, that crashed and burned horribly. In the spirit of a comment to a post I made a few days earlier, I decided to try dating again. Due to the pandemic, online dating made the most sense.
Does it, though? I mean, it does.
Yeah, it does.
I mean, like, what are you going to go to the bar?
Yeah.
I found/took some really nice photos of myself, downloaded Tinder, and just decided to be my most authentic self. After a few hours, I matched with this attractive guy who messaged me shortly. I could see he was super interested in me since he asked so many questions and would reply within a relatively short time of receiving the answer. It turned out we have so much in common, from the same sense of humor to fancy pigeon breeding.
What? I'm sorry. You can't just throw that out there and not elaborate.
That is very specific.
I think you've met your person.
Yeah, we're done here.
You're not going to find it.
No.
That is very specific.
Fancy pigeon breeding. Unless you were on like fancy pigeonbreedingmatch.com.
Birds.com. Birds, birds, birds. He thought I was the funniest person that he ever did talk to and really wanted to add me on Insta. He works in the medical field and that's a big plus for me because I have a soft spot for people in that field of work. So we texted for 2 days and then I just ask him out since my internship requires me to be away from home for 2 weeks every other week. And I was going on that said 2-week work trip soon, which he's right, dude. Tinder, you have a life cycle of like meeting up. Otherwise, the match
either
just dies
out. Or don't do it. Right.
He said it was a little bit early to meet up, but he is up for it since he also thought it would be too long to go 3 weeks without meeting. I hadn't gone on a date for about a year and a half, so I was super stoked. I even got my fancy pigeon dress shirt out.
Oh, sweet baby.
Sweet angel. We set up the time and place at the coffee shop, and we continued to text constantly that whole day from the time we set up the date right up into the time we met up. You're so excited. The time came. I came 10 minutes early because of etiquette. I was excited to see him, and well, I could see he was not. Aww. His face shrank when he saw me.
He had
this questioning look on his face. The conversation went like this. Him, I didn't know you were that short.
Oh, no.
Me, excuse me? Oh, I'm sorry, but you look so much taller in your pictures. I'm sorry? No need to apologize. I was just expecting something different. Aww. Me, well, I really don't know how to respond to that. My height is listed on my profile, and there's quite literally a whole Instagram worth of photos on there. I personally thought that the tone of his voice signaled annoyance slash anger.
No, that's rude. I'm sorry. It is. Like, we've talked many times on this podcast about being honest and upfront, and I do think that that's important, but there is a kind way to do it, and that's not the way.
Yeah, to just get that look of visible, like...
Nah.
And it's something that, again, people cannot help. Like, right. You can't help how tall you are. Like, that is such a shitty thing to make somebody feel bad about. And they weren't being deliberately deceptive either.
Right.
So,
yeah, I always put my height on my fucking shit because, you know, dude pretty much did the same thing for me for being too tall. So, yeah, fuck it. After that, I tried to make conversation, but I just saw that the dude lost all interest in me. Aww. Then he made a half-hearted excuse about needing to prepare for his job tomorrow and just left. The whole date lasted maybe 10 minutes.
Aww. You do not want to be with somebody who is that shallow. I'm sorry. Like, to not even give you a chance as a human being because of something as like arbitrary as your height is so stupid to me. Like, you can have preferences. I'm not saying that you can't have preferences. You know, that's totally fine. I'm just saying, to completely dismiss someone out of hand, someone who you had chemistry with, because of something like that, and again, something that they weren't being deceptive about, is gross.
And listen, he says he's 5'9". And the dude was 6'1". So you're not talking about an enormous difference either.
No.
So yeah, he goes on to call his friend, and which is a really great, like, at least you have like a friend to cheer you up. But that just makes me think of just that moment where you're like so excited to meet somebody after texting and having good chemistry. And then it's... That and, is
and
awful.
The thing is, you can meet someone and say like, oh, you know, actually, I don't know that this is going to work out, like, just because it's not my preference or whatever. But to not even be able to have a good meal, or like not be able to just like talk to them as another like person
you
who maybe you could like.
Both are into fancy
fucking
pigeons. Breeding.
You're not going to find anyone else.
You can't
else.
Fucking have a cup of coffee and be a decent human.
Talk about some pigeons.
Yeah.
Rude. I
mean,
hate
you
it.
Could at least make a friend out of this.
Exactly.
Like, I just don't
That's
understand.
The thing. Like, I'm just like,
saying.
Anyone who's rude like that is like, I don't know. You dodged a bullet with someone like that because that's gross to me.
Well, speaking of shallow howls, here we go. This didn't happen to me, but happened sometime back. I was a waiter at a high-end restaurant. It was a special occasion place for most ordinary folk. We had a few regulars where money wasn't an issue, but a table for two for dinner would normally be around 150 pounds. One night, while on shift, a guy arrived and told me that he had a reservation for two and that he was meeting a first date with a girl he really liked. He seemed really kind. He sat for an hour at the bar, had a couple of drinks for Dutch courage, I guess, before coming to me and asking to get his coat as he thinks he got stood up. Just then, this woman arrives, and she's just one of the most undignified and rude people I have ever encountered.
Oh.
No apology, no nothing. I could tell just by her body language that this was just one of those people.
Oh no.
She proceeded to order the most expensive champagne cocktail while looking at the menu. It took them a while or I took them to the table and asked whether they were ready to order. They weren't quite there yet, and she wanted the wine list, and the kind man said, "I'll let the lovely lady choose while I go to the bathroom." He left, and she went straight for the fine Bordeaux and selected a 965-pound bottle of wine.
No.
Oh my God.
I kid not.
I cannot fucking imagine.
Oh my God.
Imagine
965-pound bottle.
Oh my God. I like my stomach flipped.
Gross. I could not. I could never.
Anyhow, the cellar is in the same direction of the bathrooms, so I conveniently hovered around with the Petrus red wine until the nice man came out of the bathroom, and I explained that the wine that was chosen and subtly dropped in the price. And I watched his face drain of color.
$1,000.
Bottle of wine.
For a bottle of wine.
A bottle of wine.
Oh, stop.
I could tell that he was uncomfortable, but I suggested a wine around 30 pounds, which he accepted as more suited. When I presented the wine, decanted to the table, I made a big show and said, "Madame, the 1980-ish, I forget the year, Petrus, would you like to try?" She, of course, accepted and did so with this attitude. Of course, she said the wine was delicious.
Oh, because she didn't. Yeah, exactly. She didn't know. She went to the most expensive thing on the menu, yep, assuming that it was the best thing on the menu. Right.
And only me and him knew that the bottle was actually a 30-pound bottle of wine. When I took the payment for the bill, there was a definitely bro code eye contact.
Do not show her this.
And a certain smugness. She still had the attitude of some princess. I do hope that he banged her before he told her. And I hope he got someone who is kind and respectful to service staff and the person they were supposed to be dating.
That's so gross, awful. Now, as somebody that I have tasted like expensive wine, never like not wine like that.
$1,000 bottle of wine.
Listen,
right?
I'm going to be honest with you. I may not have the most refined palate, but I guarantee you 99% of people would not be able to tell the difference between a $30 bottle of wine and a $100 bottle
that,
of wine.
Here's the thing. Yeah,
I've had a $1,000 bottle of wine. If the fact that she didn't notice
that it means she's not a sommelier.
Like, you would know.
I feel like the only difference that I've ever noticed between an expensive bottle of wine and a cheap bottle of wine is the hangover.
Right.
That is the only difference I've ever noticed. Like, flavor-wise, I don't care.
Yeah.
I don't care.
Wine is good.
Wine is good.
Yeah.
The end.
The end. End of.
But yeah, there's this thing, and I think it's on Hulu. It's like some kind of scam show, and you know I like a good scam. Mm-hmm. But there was a guy that was basically like, he sold one of the Koch brothers like a bunch of fake expensive wine, and it's this whole saga of like he basically like scammed the whole wine world.
Damn.
Like bunches of people like paying millions of dollars for these quote unquote fancy wine bottles, and it's
just goes to show you, man, just because something is more expensive doesn't mean it's better. Like, yep. It's fine. Stop. Okay.
I am interested in this documentary though. No.
Yeah, no, I'm gonna have to look it up.
So I'm very excited.
Okay.
Because
you've known for a while what you
I have known because I knew that I was going to be doing the Tainted Love for the first week of October.
Spooky
season, which is my favorite.
Yeah.
I love spooky season. And this story I had heard initially on Lore. It was one of the first like handful of Lore episodes. And and
you're just so excited.
I was like, what? When I first listened to that episode. And so I knew that it would be perfect for an October Tainted Love. So I got some of my information from that episode. Also, IrishTimes.com, IrishPost.com, and a Mental Floss episode. I think Christina knows what I'm doing.
This is so exciting.
Okay. So Bridget Boland was born around 1869 in Ballyvadlia, County Tipperary, Ireland, which was a very small community of only a couple dozen people and like a handful of homes. Like,
oh,
very
my gosh.
Small. Yeah, it was like, I don't know, like 40 people. Very small.
Wow.
When she was about 18 years old, she met and married Michael Cleary, who was a local man who worked as a cooper, which is somebody who crafts wooden casks or barrels. Mm-hmm. The couple moved into a home with Bridget's father, Patrick Boland, and the cottage they moved into had been given to Patrick after the previous tenants moved out because the land had been built near a fairy ring, which was actually just a low earthen ring that we now know is the remnants of an old, like, medieval fort. But the locals at this time believed that these rings were portals to another realm, and the previous occupants of the cottage reported that there were strange things happening around the house and on the land, and so they got the fuck out of there, and it was instead given to Bridget's father. So the way that this worked was that, like, the people who kind of, like, ran this town in order to avoid, like, there was a lot of, like, poverty kind of, like, in the area. So sure. They had these old cottages that were built on these lands that they basically gave to laborers or retired laborers. Mm-hmm. So her father was a retired laborer. So it's essentially like the old timey version of, like, public housing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's so funny. Cause I do know this story. It always makes me think of whenever I hear things like that, like the superstition of the fairy the circles fairy rings, and what they actually were.
Yeah.
Makes me think of the people that built their homes out of pieces of Roman aqueducts.
Yeah.
Which, like, even 80 years after the fall of the Roman Empire, they thought that gods must have lived there.
Isn't that wild?
Because all that knowledge had been forgotten in that wild. Time. And that just makes
It's so wild because it's not at all the way things are now, you know, but that's...
It's not that long ago, right? You'd think that somebody would have remembered and told that story.
Could have passed this down.
Right, yeah.
In the early years of their marriage, Bridget worked as a dressmaker's apprentice, but she was mostly a traditional stay-at-home wife. And though the couple never had any children, they were regarded early on as relatively happy, and they were said that they never fought, at least not publicly, that anyone ever saw. Mm-hmm. Though Michael's business as a cooper did well, as time went on, Bridget began to be... She just really wanted her independence. And so she began to keep her own flock of chickens and started selling eggs to neighbors. She obtained her own Singer sewing machine, which at the time was just
priceless,
state of the art.
Yeah.
Right. And so she began making dresses of her own and hats for the local women.
Oh,
and she was a businesswoman, right? She began pulling in more money than her husband, which was very unusual at the time. So she was also said to be clever and flirtatious. She took pride in not being dependent on her husband. And then rumors began to swirl around town that maybe she was having an affair with another man.
Oh, yeah, you can't be that
down
bold.
Down the way. Yeah, not in a town this small, either. No,
God forbid.
Yeah. And as you can imagine, the neighbors talked. Her husband was not feeling fantastic about this entire situation. On March 4th, 1895, Bridget had an egg order that she needed to fill to the house of her father's elderly cousin, Jack Dunn. So the distance was short enough that she decided to walk, and she chose to take a shortcut that led her through the fairy fort.
No.
So
don't go through the fairy fort.
Yeah, and that's what Michael said. Yeah. Her husband was like, listen, you gotta stay away from fairy rings. What is you doing? Mm-hmm. But Bridget was like... Chill. You
She's
know what I mean?
Like, I heard that they were just old forts.
Yeah, actually.
Yeah. This story is actually the worst season of Outlander.
So during the journey, the weather turned cold and wet. And by the time Bridget got home, she was shivering. And by that evening, she had taken ill with a fever and chills and was bedridden. So when Jack Dunn came by the house later that night, Bridget was still sick in bed, and he took one look at her and told Michael, that's not Bridget. Okay.
Oh, no.
So we're going to pause here, and we're going to talk a little bit about Irish folklore. Mm-hmm. Oh, we're going to talk about changelings. So changelings were said to be fairies that were left in the place of a human being, usually a child. The person would be taken for one of three reasons, either to act as a servant, for the fairies to receive the love of a human, again, usually a human child, or for malice or revenge. The changelings would look on the outside to be the human that was taken, but would often be sickly or ill-tempered in some way. So if a child was born with a deformity or was born handicapped, it was a common belief that it was not the child at all, but actually a changeling replacement, fairy replacement. So for adult changelings, the symptoms were generally less about physical differences and more about psychological changes. So signs of an adult changeling included mood swings, becoming argumentative or combative, or losing interest in friends and family. We just talked about what depression does to a person. So changelings were also said to be an ill omen and bringers of bad fortune that would drain families of their money and resources. And so because of this, the child or changeling was seen as a burden that needed to be driven out. So if the changeling was successfully driven out, the kidnapped child or adult would return unharmed to the family. So some of the ways that you could drive out a changeling would be to hold the suspected person over a fire. Or to make them drink a tea made out of the poisoned foxglove. In this case, it was said that the person would expel the toxin via vomiting or diarrhea, and the fairy would be driven out and forced to return to the fairy realm. So there are many stories that end in tragedy. I won't go into all of them, but for instance, one time when a woman was trying to drive out a changeling in 1920, she was caring for a, or 1920, whoa, 18,
okay,
20.
Okay.
She was caring for a four-year-old boy who could not use his limbs. And so she became convinced that the boy was a changeling and she bathed him in icy water, leaving him until he eventually drowned. And she used the changeling defense on the stand and was acquitted. And there were many instances of things like this. And it was usually children or women in general. So this continued throughout the 1800s with many people dying as a result of fairy exorcisms or...
The 1800s.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Not that long ago.
No.
That's what's so bananas about this story.
We're not talking 1500s.
No. You'd think we were.
No, I mean, and it's like some of these stories are like... brutal. Like it's insane. And then like other ones are maybe less actually brutal, like because like one of the ways to drive out a fairy is to hold them over fire. Yeah. So you're talking about holding children over fires and things like that. And so some are less like that, but there are other stories, many other stories of leaving an infant alone and walking away.
Can't do that.
Because you expect the fairies to come get the infant and return yours or whatever.
But it's really interesting. You find like a lot of stuff like this, even later than you think, with small isolated tribes or like towns where they don't have a lot of interaction with cities.
Outside world,
That where they just like bubble in and create this mythology. Or expand upon an existing mythology to make it their own. And it's so creepy.
Yeah. I mean, and it was interesting when I was doing the prep for this episode, reading some of the articles. I read an article on changelings or you know, whatever. And it was interesting to hear them talk about how it started. You know, there's the folklore that exists already. And then in times of extreme poverty, like maybe during famines or during the Middle Ages, when you would have a child that's difficult to care for and you could create this folklore about how changelings, you know, zap all your resources and stuff like that. And then it would make you feel less guilty about disposing of your child because it's not a child.
It's not your fault.
To you.
It's the fairies.
Well, you gotta blame the fairies.
Dude, all of my family that comes from Ireland is from Tipperary. Not this specific small town, but Tipperary. Yeah, because I've been looking through county parish marriage records and stuff.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Yeah, I mean, and there are a few stories about kind of like spooky folklore-y things in Tipperary specifically. It is interesting. Okay, so as time went on, the superstitions around changelings in rural Ireland only grew. So it didn't go anywhere, these beliefs, right?
Great.
So when Jack Dunn, who was an eccentric man rumored to have the power of divination and to be well-versed in fairy mythology, arrived to check on Bridget in March of 1895, again, It's not that long ago, really. Like,
yeah, the car is already here.
I was just going to say, we got cars now.
Yeah. And saw that she was ill in bed, he proclaimed immediately that this was not Bridget Cleary, but a changeling that was left in her place. So initially, Michael didn't believe.
She's got a flu, yo.
She's like, I'm just feeling a little under the weather, okay? Yeah.
Just don't feel good, that's all.
So Michael initially didn't believe Jack and sent him home. But when Bridget was still sick 5 days later, her father, Patrick, walked the 5 miles in the rain to the nearest doctor to request his services. When he didn't arrive 2 days later, Michael made the walk. And then 2 more days passed and the doctor still hadn't arrived and Bridget was still sick. So Michael went to the local health authority and got a summons that would require the doctor to attend to his sick wife. Right.
What the fuck,
you have
dude?
To go check on her. But while he was out delivering the summons, the doctor showed up to the house unexpectedly. So Michael wasn't home. The doctor showed up. He did a checkup on Bridget. By this time, she was gravely ill. And though he prescribed her medicine for what he suspected was bronchitis, he also advised that they call a priest to administer last rites because they're like,
oh,
look,
Jesus.
We're going to throw this thing against the wall, but she is not looking good. Okay. Right. So by the following day, and I say that only because they did have the priest come administer the last rites. And I do think that that probably put Michael and her father in a mindset about like, okay,
this is her last resort.
Yeah, she's going to die, right? So by the following day, friends and family had gathered at the Cleary home. By this time, rumors had spread, initially by Jack Dunn. And it had begun to swirl around the village that Bridget had been taken by the fairies and the sickly creature in the bed was a changeling. So Michael had also started to believe that the woman in his home was, quote, too fine, his words, too fine, girl, to be his wife.
Okay.
And that she was 2 inches taller than the woman he had known. So he became convinced that the woman in his home was an imposter. So 10 days after she initially got sick, on March 14th, Michael sent for a fairy doctor named Dennis Ganey, who provided him with fairy medicine in the form of herbs.
He
instructed him that the herbs needed to be boiled in new milk, which is the first milk produced after a cow's given birth, to Bridget.
Yet women were burned at the stake for witchcraft. Okay.
Well, what's funny is that my family from Tipperary actually crossed way before this in the late 1700s over to the New World in Massachusetts, in Salem, and in Fall River. Mm-hmm. Dude, those kind of like things like kind of morph and the witches and stuff and fairies, the superstitions. Mm-hmm. It's interesting to see
they
them.
Cling.
Yeah.
So they presented this to Bridget, and Bridget was like, look, I'm sick, but no. Like, she was like, I'm not drinking that.
Boiled herby milk? No, yeah, thank you.
No, she's like, I'm not drinking that.
I have lactose intolerance.
She feels like shit. You know what I mean? Like when you're sick, there's like so few things that you want to consume anyway.
Milk is a bit.
It's like herby milk.
Especially if it really was like bronchitis,
that can
like
actually
a
turn
sore
into strep throat. Actually, milk has a lot of carries the streptococcus virus, so it can actually give you strep throat if you get strep throat.
Ugh.
So she refused to take these herbs, and when she did, though, 3 male cousins held her down, and Michael held a hot poker to her face until she complied. I'm going to go ahead and give a trigger warning for the rest of the story.
Yep.
Shit gets worse. When Bridget still didn't get better, they called Dennis Ganey, the fairy doctor, into the home to assist. So his methods were rough, to say the least. He instructed that Michael slap Bridget while he, her father, and other members of Bridget's family held her close to an open fire while her husband demanded that she state before God and family that she was, in fact, Bridget Cleary and not a changeling fairy. Michael threw urine on her and shook her, yelling, "Away with you and come home, Bridget." Though Bridget stated over and over again that she was Bridget Cleary, the gathered crowd didn't believe her. So Jack Dunn and Michael picked Bridget up into a sitting position and held her over the kitchen fire. They continued to ask her to identify herself, and eventually she said, "I am Bridget Boland, daughter of Pat Boland, in the name of God." And by midnight, relatives said that Bridget looked wild and deranged.
You think?
Of course she would.
Oh, you think?
But and you're sick too. I'm thinking about this all through the lens of like you have bronchitis, like you have
people
fever.
Are fucking with you, like smacking you, holding throwing you over the fire, throwing piss on you.
No,
I'm fucking wild and deranged right now. Just thinking about it.
Yeah. So, but by midnight, Michael seemed to be satisfied and the ritual seemed to be completed. So the following morning, Michael called a priest in to come say mass in Bridget's bedroom in order to banish the evil spirits that were left in the house. So that morning, Bridget got out of bed and dressed in her usual fashionable clothes because she made her own dresses. So even though she lived in a very rural community, her dresses were always very like elaborate high fashion kind of dresses, and she put on her usual fashionable clothes. Her cousin Joanna, who had come by the night before to check on Bridget, would later tell magistrates that she dressed this way to, quote, give her courage when she would go among the people, because this was a small village and there had been 10 people in and out throughout the day of what she had gone through the day before. So she's basically like, I'm gonna save face.
Yeah,
I need to pull my stuff together, right?
Yeah.
Everything seemed fine, or as fine as it could be, given
she's
the
like,
situation.
You guys, it worked. Thanks.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
still
and
the
also,
bronchitis, but that worked.
It seemed like maybe she was doing a little bit better because she had been medicated. Like the doctor came and gave her some like antibiotics, you know? But later in the morning, Bridget asked for some milk to go with her tea. And at this, Michael lost it, because fairies are known in folklore to yearn for fresh milk. And so Michael became convinced once again that this was a fairy witch in his house.
Oh my goodness.
So Bridget was exhausted by this point, right? Who wouldn't be? So she told Michael, whose mother had died when he was a small child, that, quote, your mother used to go with the fairies and that's why you think I'm going with them. He lost his shit.
Don't say
that.
Shit about his mom.
Yeah.
He's like, you keep my mom's name out of your mouth.
Yes. He lost his mind. He flew into a rage. And by this point, there were other relatives who had come over to check on Bridget and to have tea with them. And they were like, we'd like to go now, please. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Michael screamed at them that no one was leaving until he got his wife back. So he locked the door and he put the key in his pocket. He prepared 3 pieces of bread and jam and demanded that Bridget eat them. She ate the first 2, and when she hesitated on the 3rd, her husband threw her to the ground and threatened her, if you won't take it, down you will go. So he jabbed...
I feel like down I'm going.
I feel like I'm down. He jabbed his knee into her chest and forced the last piece of bread and jam down her throat. Then he stripped her down to her underwear, hit her head against the floor, grabbed a paraffin lamp, dumped the oil over her, and lit her clothing on fire with a hot poker. So she immediately went up in flames. And as he watched her burn, Michael said, it is not my wife. I am not going to keep an old witch in place of my wife, so I must get back my wife. It is not Bridget I am burning. You will soon see her go up the chimney.
Oh my goodness.
Joanna later testified that the house was full of smoke and smell, and, quote, when I looked down to the kitchen, I saw the remains of Bridget Cleary on the floor lying on a sheet. She was 26 years old. Michael then left the house, locking Bridget's relatives inside with the burned corpse. They waited there for an hour.
I want to go home.
Yeah, can I go
I just came for
home?
Tea.
I thought there would be tea. I didn't know
why I was signing up for this. So they waited there for an hour before Michael returned with a knife that he used to threaten Bridget's cousin, Patrick Kennedy, if he didn't help him bury Bridget's body. So Michael had dug a shallow grave. That's what he'd been doing for the last hour. And it was a quarter of a mile from the cottage. And the two men carried Bridget's body out. And then they made the rest of the family, or he made the rest of the family, swear that they wouldn't tell authorities what had happened.
Honey.
Yeah.
You think a town of 40 people ain't going to know that they're now 39?
Suspicious.
Yeah, exactly.
You can look and count and see what we're missing.
I feel like we're missing somebody.
I feel like we're missing somebody. Go touch heads like you did in elementary school. You're like,
no, we're missing Goose.
No. Mm-mm. So the following morning, Michael arrived at the local church in hysterics. He was crying, tearing at his hair and asking the priest if he could go to confession. The priest was like, I feel like you are not in a good state, my man, and told him that he wasn't fit to receive the sacrament and sent him away. He's like, you come back when you're more clear headed. So later, Jack Dunn, who had not been present when Bridget was burned, would tell the priest that Michael had claimed to have burned his wife to death the day before and that he was trying to convince him to bring Bridget's body to the church to give her a Christian burial. So at this point, the priest is like, I would like
to not be part of this.
There's some real suspicious stuff going on here. So he was like, I don't know if I believe you because you both seem out of your goddamn mind.
Talking about fairies and shit.
Right. He's like, but I'm going to go tell the authorities
but
anyway.
He's like,
so he decided to go to the authorities anyway. They questioned her friends and relatives for days and searched for Bridget for days. Michael spoke to those around him about possibly fleeing to escape capture, but said that he couldn't because he needed to wait for Bridget to return to him because it was a changeling. So his wife has to come back to him.
This works.
So for three consecutive nights, he waited at the ring fort for Bridget.
She's with that hot guy. On Outlander.
Yeah, for real. Jamie.
I'm hoping. Yeah.
Jamie. So he waited at the ring fort, the one that Bridget had cut through whenever she was delivering eggs and got sick that day. He waited there for three consecutive nights, believing that she would reappear to him galloping on a white horse, which is what the legends would say, that they would return on a white horse.
No.
On March 20th, my birthday, arrest warrants were issued for Michael, Dennis Gainey, and eight people from Bridget's circle who had been in and out of the house on the days of her exorcism. 2 days later, they found her body, charred and curled in the fetal position with her arms wrapped around her knees. Her face, which had remained unburned, was covered in a sack, and the only clothing left on her body was a pair of stockings. Everything else had burned away.
Ooh.
The case was widely covered, reaching London and even America. The English papers treated it as fodder for reinforcing the idea of barbarism in rural Ireland.
Yeah.
They were like, oh, those Irish, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, no.
Never mind. I was going to say something, but I'll keep that to myself.
You're like, I'm going to keep that hot take real buried.
Bury that down. When the prisoners were brought before the magistrates on March 25th, they were ushered in by the screams of an angry mob. Like, people traveled in for this. This was like old school. Like, for something in this time to make it, like, make national news.
Basically.
Like, now we have global. Worldwide, like, yeah.
They're like,
that's what I meant. Yeah, global news.
It was like Morse coded over to the States. They were like, hey.
On July 5th, 1895, Michael was found guilty of manslaughter and imprisoned along with Jack Dunn, Patrick Boland, and four of Bridget's cousins, including Patrick Kennedy.
Wait, Jack Dunn wasn't even there.
No, but he was there during the pre-stuff, but day before.
I mean...
I don't know. You hold a woman over a hot fire, you got to get
this
something.
This is true. This is true. Yeah. I forgot he was there for that part. You're right. I'm like, he's just the one who said he suspected it. Yeah, but you're right.
Like,
I forgot
I
about that.
Threw out the idea.
Yeah.
The judge ruled out a verdict of murder because he believed that they all had acted out of genuine belief.
I actually agree with that.
That's tough.
Well, it's the same thing I was talking about with that murder documentary, the guy that has multiple personalities or whatever. And just like, if you believe in it, are you culpable if another personality like committed the crimes and you don't know that personality?
So do we only put one of the personalities in prison?
Yeah, the truth.
No, you put the whole
person.
The personality, the body that that holds that personality.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I can't. Like, can't I don't risk. Know. This is 1895, so maybe, but like in general, that wouldn't hold up at all today. No. Like, you can't be in a cult and be like, this is what our cults believe.
Right. And because there's access to information now. That's the difference. I mean, back then, these communities were so separated from.
But does it make a difference? Okay, you act out of genuine belief. Understood. However, that genuine belief, what's to say that you're going to get out of prison and not still adhere to that belief? This could happen again.
Sure.
You know, like, it's not like it couldn't. Like, belief is incredibly powerful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So to me, I'm like, I don't know. Manslaughter seems like not enough for burning your wife to death.
Seems light.
And torturing her for like 2 days. Michael was released in 1910, after which he boarded a ship for Montreal.
Oh, goody.
Jack Dunn served a 3-year prison sentence before returning to the area where he kept working as a laborer. Bold. Just move back into town.
He's like, this is fine. And you guys know this is fine, right?
Bridget's story is said to be that of the last witch burned alive in Ireland, and many speculate that it was her free-thinking, independent, modern spirit that allowed people to so quickly believe that she was a changeling. There was obviously something wrong with an ambitious, child-free woman who refused to conform to the patriarchal norms of her real community. This was me going off script.
Yes. Yeah. It's hard to see that, though, because she lived that way for a really long time, and it was just during one small trip. So she was already living that life. She was already being this bold woman some time.
Look how quickly they jumped to the conclusion that she had to be a changeling. Like,
I guess I wonder like how her personality changed from that bold personality to being like sick. Like, yeah, she now was, she's not bold. This isn't my bold wife.
That's kind of what presents. So when you're saying like he acted out of genuine belief and that's why he got manslaughter, there is also another school of thought that this is something that he just wanted to do. He felt emasculated by his wife, mm-hmm. who like was
making more money than him,
didn't need him, and was rumored to be having an affair with somebody else.
You forgot about that affair. You got to bring that shit in. And you tell me about that.
And that, you know, not only him, but also like a lot of these people who were doing this were her cousins, other male relatives, men in the community.
Sure.
And that it was, maybe they wouldn't have done it, but they had an excuse to kind of like stamp out this, you know, bold,
independent
woman.
Free thinking woman. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And who's to say if that's why, but
yeah,
in the history of witches.
Sure.
You could be called a witch for fucking anything. Yeah. Like, just because you run your mouth, you're a witch.
Oh, you have an opinion? Witch.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. So today in Tipperary, her story hasn't been forgotten. There's a local nursery rhyme that has endured, and it runs, are you a witch or are you a fairy or are you the wife of Michael Clary?
Ooh. Damn. Michael Clary got had in that shit.
Got. That is the story of Bridget Clary. Welcome to spooky season.
What a great way to ring in October. Yes. I remember that pressure. From lore. Yes. And then when you started, I was like, oh my God. If it's this story,
it's the best one.
It is.
It really is. The episode is called Black Stockings. Mm-hmm. If you want to listen to that episode, I think they just remastered it even because they're re-releasing some of their original episodes kind of like remastered. So go listen to that one.
You set the bar for spooky.
Dude, I know. I'm scared. Like, what the fuck am I going to do next?
I got to find a good
pirate ghost story or some shit.
Oh, Jesus. I know. I used my pirate ghost one too early this year.
You done did
Had
it.
Had to be done.
What are you watching?
Well, I watched that, the 24 faces of...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
What's his face?
I do want to watch that.
I will say it started strong and ended a little bit weak, but it's still very interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. And I'd love to hear your thoughts on it.
Yeah.
I have always been a little bit poo-poo about the whole multiple personality. Mm-hmm.
I have a great book for you then.
Because, and I think part of it is my whole like walk it off mentality.
Midwestern mentality.
Yeah. I mean, the guy is from Columbus, Ohio. So they were like, I'm sorry, sir, you're going to have to walk this off.
We're not going to give you any mental health care.
But yeah, I still really don't know what I believe in regards to his certain case,
sure,
even after watching the whole thing. But I did think it was pretty interesting.
Yeah. The whole idea of dissociative disorder is very fascinating to me. I actually, when I told you I have a good, there is a really great book. It's called My Life in Plural. Can't remember the author's name, but it's his firsthand account of having, at the time, was called multiple personality disorder.
DID, yeah.
It's,
you know? Yeah.
Fucking fascinating.
It makes sense very to me that, like, if you have such a traumatic thing happen to you super early, like, it makes sense. However, any knowledge that I have about it has always been like criminals trying to use it to get out of things. Sure. So I probably just don't have, like you said, a reference point with somebody that has legitimately dealt with the disease.
Yeah. Dealt with it and became a lawyer.
Yeah. I think it got, I think that because of that, because we're usually only exposed to it on the level of like criminals trying to use it, or a lot of the big cases that we were like, oh, like multiple Sybil. Personalities, like Sybil turned out to be like bullshit.
Right.
That it's kind of put a cloud over the entire thing. But it does make sense to me that your brain is capable of doing like the
whatever
file
it
shit.
Needs to do to protect itself. Yeah.
The
fact
that they were like hooking him up to like EEGs, though, like, it's one thing to be like a really good actor or actress and be able to like maybe convince people in front of you that you really believe this thing, but to convince a fucking like medical machine into being like the changes that were happening, they're like, that is fucking impossible. Like that to me is like, I don't know. Like,
I actually think, and this will not spoil it or whatever, I think that he legitimately has dissociative disorder.
Sure.
But it got blown up by people around him because the Sybil doctor ended up being with him and stuff. Got blown up for publicity, money, and all that stuff into being more bigger, all that stuff than what it was. So that's my two cents. But it is very interesting. I'm super interested to watch the Britney versus Spears. But yeah, that's kind of what I got going on. And I'm going to watch Under the Tuscan Sun tonight.
Oh, there you go.
I've done it. It was all part of my master plan. I actually invested some money in this movie called Under the Tuscan.
Well, again, y'all know me. I watched Malignant.
Oh, no.
Oh, man.
I've heard it's wacky.
Dude.
I've heard it is. I don't know the spoiler.
It is some of the weirdest, wildest shit I have ever seen. The second half of the movie, like the first half, you're like, yes, predictably going along. This feels very much like a James Wan horror film. Like, that's what we're doing, and I am living for it. Shit gets wild, like in the second half of the movie, and it is so bizarre and like weird and campy. But I didn't hate it. It's strange. It's like, I didn't hate it.
Okay.
I still very much enjoyed it, but
it's not what you expected.
I think everyone should just watch it themselves. Because
you're like, take your own journey with it.
It's a little nonsensical and strange, but I still enjoyed it. So, yeah.
That's good.
Interesting. You said you watched the new Candyman, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Dylan, I really liked that too.
Dylan and Chris watched it last night.
Yeah, I liked it.
Yeah. They liked the first one better.
The first one is scarier. Consensus.
Yeah.
The first one is scarier, but I thought that the second one was a very good sequel because it is hard to make horror sequels. And I thought it was a good sequel.
Did not watch it. Yeah. Did not stay in my tracks. Room,
the original is in my like top five scariest.
It's great. Yeah. The original is very good.
Yeah. Didn't watch that. What I did watch was Only Murders in the Building. I started watching that. We're up to the, like, they're dropping it, like, episode by episode. So we're caught up. It is so good. It's actually really fucking good.
Okay. I've heard good things.
I don't love what's his name?
Steve Martin?
No, I love
Martin Short.
Love Steve Martin. Yeah, kind of on the fence about Martin Short. He's kind of like one of those, like,
I know exactly what you mean.
He just gets annoying. And I won't say that there's not part times where you're just like, he's a bit annoying, but the balance between like Selena Gomez and Steve Martin,
I like her too.
Fucking
we should fuck, marry, kill the three amigos. Just gonna put that out there.
Oh my god, that's right. Three amigos. Oh my god.
That would be
That'd be pretty easy, actually.
That would be very difficult for me.
I don't think so. Wait, it's Chevy Chase,
Martin Short, and Steve Martin.
Yeah. You fucking wait,
we'll do it later. We'll do it another time.
This is solid. It's easy. All right, anyway. Fucking Martin or Martin Short, meh. But Steve Martin and Selena Gomez, darlings. The story takes some turns, of course, like it should. It's cute. I really want to see it.
I do.
Okay.
Really, really good.
Yeah, I'm going to check it out.
Yeah.
I forgot to mention that I did watch the final episode of Nine Perfect Strangers.
I was
going
to talk to you about that off mic because...
Do not, I repeat this, if you learn nothing from this podcast, if you take nothing away,
don't do it.
Don't watch Nine Perfect Strangers.
Oh, I'm so glad I didn't. It pissed me off to such a terrible degree. Oh my God.
That's the worst TV show I've watched in a while.
And it started off so strong. I'm really upset.
I was so worried when you were like, uh-oh, tell me when you've seen the last episode. I was like, oh my God, does it fucking take a turn to good? Because I
did not.
This roller coaster, I can't. I was like, do I have to watch it now? I'm so glad
I thought it was bottom, it found a new bottom to go to.
If I was Leon Moriarty, I would furious that somebody adapted my book this badly. And if you read the book, doubly do not put yourself through watching the show because it is so drastically
it's so different. Bad.
Oh, awful. Oh, it's so horrifying. Bad. Yeah.
Blech. Well, anyways.
Awful.
You have something that we should watch.
Or not watch.
Or not
you
watch.
You want to warn us on something. You can do that.
Yes, we would appreciate it because I wasted a good 9 hours on that. Go to our one-stop shop of a website. It's myworstdatepodcast.com, and we love you so much.
Cheers.